We own this country. We own it. And it's not you owning it and not politicians owning it. Politicians are employees of ours. And they're just going to come around and beg for votes every few years, and it's the same old deal. But I just think that it's important that you realize that whether you're Democrat or whether you're a Republican or whether you're Libertarian or whatever, when somebody does not do the job, we've got to let them go.
When your entire culture is under attack, you need the country's number one voice in defense of our American way of life. You need an ally in the fight against tyranny and corruption. You need your weekly dose of Lisa Payne Nager. Missouri Grassroots Radio Network proudly adds our own beauty to America the Beautiful, your own culture vigilante, Ms. Lisa Payne Nager.
Welcome and thanks for joining us again on another week of Missouri Grassroots Radio. This is Culture Vigilante and I am Lisa Nager. I want to start out the show by thanking all of you good folks who participated in the Kickstarter program last week with our great guest, Mark Marshall. They will be making the movie Return, Remember the Sultana. I can't wait to see that documentary because there's so much that situation, you know, like we uncovered in the interview last week about the corruption and of this country's most, the greatest maritime disaster this country has ever seen, that, and probably the most undertaught, underreported piece of history probably in this country, is going to finally get made. So next week, last week as of
Lisa, can you hear me? Hello? Hello? Lisa? Lisa, I don't know if you can hear me, but I cannot hear you.
Okay, trying it again. Are you there, Owen?
All right, I can hear you now.
Oh, okay. Sorry for that confusion, and sorry for keeping you.
Don't worry, Lisa. This is all part of being some of the alternative media. I've been dealing with a lot of this week.
Yeah, we've had these issues with Skype before. So, Owen, okay, we tried to start the show off kind of touching on this Bergdahl thing. I'm imagining that you've been touching on it on your show all week long. Do you want to start with that?
Yeah, that's pretty much all I can cover these days. I did a whole 3 hours on it last night. The deeper you dig into this thing, the more sketchy it becomes, I guess. Now, granted, obviously we don't have all the intel, but based on the intelligence that the public now has, based on the public opinion of his military brethren, the Obama administration really botched this one. They really did a number here. I mean, I couldn't find anything to relate this to. I mean, this could potentially be worse than Benghazi, worse than the Obamacare bill. I mean, this is like, just last night from reading these news stories, you learn more, it just gets weirder and weirder, his parents being involved. I'm all over the board with this deal, but it is certainly an interesting topic.
And just be short, went on the air. I heard a news report that Obama made a statement that he missed the situation, that he thought that the people were more interested in getting POWs released than anything else. So that's why he did it. And I tell you, if we have a commander in chief who is governing by political winds instead of what's the right thing to do and following the Constitution, we're a bigger problems than Taliban leaders being released from Guantanamo Bay.
Well, it's funny you use that phrase, political winds. Back in 2008, Barack Obama, and I'm quoting, said if the political winds were to change, he would side with the Muslims. But getting back to this current situation with Bo Bergdahl, you know, I was watching the Pentagon Channel today, and they were doing a press hearing on this with one of their talking heads. But there is a lot of doublespeak in this, and obviously this is nothing new out of the White House. But first of all, by declaring Bo Bergdahl a prisoner of war, which actually, if you look at Pentagon records, Lisa, he was never declared a prisoner of war. So there's that. Secondly, if you do declare him a prisoner of war, well, now you're accepting that the Taliban is either a nation or a state that you are at war with, which is obviously not the truth. So you're not negotiating with a nation state. Well, who are you negotiating with? Well, you're negotiating with terrorists. So now you get into this whole thing of, well, we don't negotiate with terrorists, but here we are negotiating with terrorists. Now, the irony of this is that this is basically one illegal government trading a prisoner to another illegal government is basically what it gets down to. But I think facts are still going to emerge with this thing that we don't know. But based on what I see with it now, and I'm sure you would agree, I mean, this is one of the biggest blunders of the Obama administration.
Yeah, I mean, and they just keep getting worse. I mean, how you kind of think, well, Ben, Obamacare was awful. Benghazi was just absolutely atrocious. And now this, I mean, I'm pretty floored by it. And what really is that they'll march up and down my street or your street or anywhere else with pitchforks and torches. People are not outraged. I guess people are still watching American Idol and drinking beer. And what, I mean, I don't understand. I don't understand. You know, I don't know how else, you know, you spell treason any other way. The man's a traitor.
Amazing. I agree. And
okay.
It's time to step up the rhetoric. I say the same thing on my show. I mean, the guy is – I mean, how many different angles do we have this guy guilty of treason on? I mean, how is he not being impeached? There's even a Democrat – now, granted, it's in Texas, but it is a Democrat running his campaign on the basis that he will move to impeach Obama. I don't know how Obama will get out of this administration. Yeah, it's pretty wild. I mean, it's going to become more popular as he continues to get worse. So I don't know how he makes it out of this 4 years without getting impeached, to be honest with you, at this point. But, you
well,
know,
I'll tell
just
you.
Looking at – go ahead.
Go ahead. Oh, well,
just looking at some of the loose ends of this Bergdahl thing, I mean, what is – I don't know if you saw the video of the press conference with Obama and the two parents, but first of all, that is unheard of, okay? That whole thing is what I like to call a psyop. Them putting the family out there, they're trying to tap into the human emotion. They're trying to win people over. It's basically part of the brainwashing with the TV to get people to feel emotional, like this soldier is going to be united back with his family, so this is a win for us. So that's how I break that down. But when you watch Bob Bergdahl, Bo's father, he gets up there and he speaks in Pashto, which is native to Afghani, and he says, "Praise Allah, the great and merciful," which I have no problem with anyone who's religious. I can find honor in any man, religious or non-religious. But the fact that he said that on the White House podium, and then what was even more chilling to me, Barack Obama literally smiles and gets excited. I watched this thing 100 times. I never noticed Obama actually smiling and getting excited when he goes into the Pashto. So it's just really, I mean, this thing is just getting weirder and weirder. It's funny, Lisa, you know, you obviously follow this too, but it really does get weirder every day.
Yeah, it does. It gets worse all the time and just scares me. It just frightens me. Well, we're going to continue the discussion on your radio program tonight, 1880.
Yes.
Hey, and we'll discuss, and you in St. Louis. Is that correct?
You broke up on me, but it sounded like you said 1380 in St. Louis, and you'll be on with me at 9:15.
Can people stream it if they're not in St. Louis?
Yes, you can. If you Google my name, Owen Schroyer, Owenshroyer, that will take you to my YouTube page, and you can find the live video stream there. You can download 1380 the X for your smartphone as well if you want an app on your phone to listen there. So there's different ways.
Okay. Oh, and thank you so much for coming on. Sorry about the technical difficulties at the top of the show, but we'll get those worked out. And next time we have you on, I'll have it figured out, I hope.
Hey, don't worry. I deal with this all the time. Hopefully we'll get all clean tonight on my show.
Okay. Talk to you soon.
Bye. Bye, Lisa.
Thanks. Okay, folks, we've got a great lineup for you tonight. We're going to have Paul Ellison back on. We're going to get an update. There's evidently more hanky-panky going on down in Camden County with the Lagares family situation. Denny Lagares still has not seen his kids other than unsupervised visits, and he has not had his day in court as far as I know, and there's more hanky-panky with the administration of that area and the powers that be. So we're going to find out what those details are. And there was a little incident at the lake. Paul has information on as well. Talk to Dr. Dwayne Weed, who's going to be prepping tips. This time we're going to talk about healthcare. Dr. Weed is a licensed chiropractic physician, and he's got a fabulous couple of websites. We're going to give you the information on all of that. With the VA scandal that everybody's been focusing on and how bad it's been for those folks, how the bureaucracy has just made a total mess of that. I mean, that's just kind of a glimpse into what you're healthcare, folks, and Dr. Weed's going to give you some tips on how to maybe take matters into your own hands, take your own healthcare into your own hands, just like a good culture vigilante should do, so that you will be able to solve issues without government intervention. And I am very happy to say that we have back on with us tonight Ryan Payne of Operation Mutual Aid. Ryan Payne was the commander on the ground at the Bundy Ranch. He's going to give some to what on behind the scenes there and give us a little bit of information about the militia movement, and kind of a continuation of the interviews that we've had with him in the past. Obviously, those kinds of situations have stepped up. Last year when we had Ryan on, we didn't really, it was our first exposure to what the militia was and that it was even out there. A lot of us didn't even know that it was out there. We're going to talk to him in just a few minutes and get some updates on that. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
It really is time for the people of America to take up pitchforks.
You better not cry. You better not pout. I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming.
No matter what time of year it is, it's never too early to start preparing for the holidays. And here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, we're thinking of Christmas now. Why? Because we've set an ambitious goal for ourselves to raise $2,000. That's right, we want to raise $2,000 in 2013 to help some Missouri families who may be struggling in this Obama economy to provide a magical Christmas morning for their children. Last year, in 2012, Missouri Grassroots Coalition touched the lives of 15 families because of the generosity of conservatives across the state who provided us with the means to pay off their layaway accounts on Christmas Eve. This year, we'd like to be able to help twice that number of families, and we're asking you to help us with that goal. Please go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and click on the Secret Santa tab. All the details are there for you to send us what you can by PayPal, check, or money order. We want to thank all who contributed last year for their generosity and hope that you will all help us continue to prove that charitable giving works best in a constitutional republic.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I've got a feeling that the tide is turning.
Is life so dear, or peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
This is Lisa Payne-Nanger. You're listening to Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio. And like I said before the break, I am very happy to have back on with me tonight Mr. Ryan Payne. Ryan Payne is with Operation Mutual Aid. He's kind of the command with this. It's a militia type of an organization. He's here with us tonight to talk a little bit about some of the things that happened at the Bundy Ranch and to kind of give us some more information about what this militia movement is and what it means to the United States. Thanks for being back here with me today, and I know you've been a very busy guy over the last couple of months.
Quite. quite. Yeah, things ramped up there all of a sudden, it seems like.
Yeah, so you were on with me, the last half of last year, and it was the first time I had ever really been exposed to any of this militia movement. We kind of talked a little bit about what really kind of tried to educate them, because, hey, you know, there is a militia movement out there of concerned citizens who networked and band together to kind of start, you know, push back against this anti-constitutional rhetoric down from our government. Can we kind of get a little bit of an overview of that kind of movement and what Operation Mutual Aid is and how you guys kind of found each other?
Sure. The Operation Mutual Aid is based around its mission statement. And very generally, the mission statement says that we will be the barrier between tyrants and the oppressed. And this is imperative in a state of liberty that there be those types of individuals that are willing to stand between tyrants and the oppressed. As everyone is aware of historically, they can get pretty mean. They can get downright violent and do incredibly horrible things. So it's imperative that individuals step forward to form that barrier. Now, I want to specify also that it's a little more of an association than an organization, based on the fact that Operation Mutual Aid's mission statement does form a unity around a common sentiment, but for instance, as in the Bunkerville situation with the Bundy Ranch, the structure of command is formed on the ground, and if there is a unit that's present that holds jurisdiction in the area, for instance, you know, the local county militia unit, they would form the command structure. And then there would, you know, hopefully present itself a leadership council. So, but all that stuff is done on the ground once, you know, there's a combined action formed, like Bunkerville. Outside of that, it's just basically a network. And it's a bunch of militia units and individuals from across the country that have all agreed to that mission statement. And they either volunteer locally for their own state, or for possibly their region of states, and some people, they volunteer nationally. And God bless all of them for what they do.
No kidding. You know, and I think one of the things that just struck me the most, which was the most surprising to me the last time we spoke, was that there were that many of the like-minded mission of folks across the country who wanted to band together to do this kind of thing, who felt the same way. I mean, basically, you folks are all committed to putting your life on the line to protect folks who are in need of protection, who are being who their constitutional rights are being trampled on by their local or even federal government, as we saw in the case of Clive and Bundy. And you are willing to do it. You'll come from all over the country. You'll leave your families, your jobs, your homes, and put everything on the line to stand up for what's right. I mean, it's, you know, from the outside looking in, it's a pretty amazing network.
And I've told numerous people this, the men and the women that I met and know through the Bunkerville situation take up the majority of the best people that I've ever known in my life and possibly will ever know. They're very dedicated. They know the Constitution. They know what their rights are. One of the very common traits was that there are God-fearing people, and these people from all over the country that believe in this cause, because, you know, our rights come from outside of the government, and you can consider them natural rights, and for most of us who are God-fearing, that means that those rights come from the God of nature. And I met very few atheists, we'll put it that way. I agree, and I commend all of them. Once again, I can't thank them enough. I'm sure the Bundy family, as they always express their great thanks.
You know, and so, I mean, it's very heartening, because whether they get there, whether they, you know, derive this from the execution or God, you know, it's very, in this culture, this day and age, it is just so heartening to see that many people with that strong of a character. Character is so lacking in our culture today. People don't even think about it anymore. They don't really respect it. They don't, you know, a lot of, you know, it's just not really taught. And, you know, it's just amazing the type of character that it takes for people to stand up under those kind of circumstances and possibly make those kinds of sacrifices for what they believe in. It's just truly, truly amazing to me.
Yeah, the you talk about the moral fiber. The
absolutely
character. There's a lot of characters out there. There's very few of very high moral character. Exceptional character, and the people that surround the Bundys, the militiamen and the patriots that responded to the call in Bunkerville, they carried that trait, and that was a high moral fabric that they're made of. So they are out there.
Yeah.
It's just there's three things specifically that I attribute to this moral character, and the majority of these people you'll find have these three traits in mind all the time. And truth, love, and unity. And they base their decisions and judge the world based on their knowledge of the truth. They're very giving. Obviously, they're giving of themselves. To quote the last sentence of the Declaration of Independence, they're willing to give their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor in pursuit of freedom for all. And the last one there, unity. To be able to form that cohesion with people from all over the country and accomplish the goal is it just outlines the type of individuals that answer that call.
Yeah, I don't think you would have been as successful if you hadn't had that foundation. Okay, tax here. First of all, okay, so early in April, I would imagine you guys were watching the situation long before it was on any of our radar screens. How did you find out about the situation at the Bundy Ranch?
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that. I remember the last time we talked, we were preparing to make the call to go into West Virginia.
Yeah.
Supporting the Jared Markham case. And, you know, there was about 2 weeks there before that operation was supposed to happen of being able to make those contacts and all that stuff. This situation was much different. I heard about it on that Sunday before the standoff.
Really?
So exactly a week before, I made contact with Mr. Bundy the following morning, and by that afternoon, I was on the road and arrived there at about 7 in the morning on Tuesday. And then the standoff happened. There was already snipers and such, which is kind of what brought us there. It didn't take much. Once I saw pictures of snipers sitting on the hilltop staring at the family, we knew it was time.
Okay. I mean, we were pretty much well aware that, I mean, they had pretty much an arm, kind of a paramilitary situation set up, you know, snipers and tanks and whatever. But yeah, can you kind of give us an idea of what you saw when you first got there and kind of outline, you know, what does it feel like to walk into a situation here on American soil where you could see this kind of situation? Just, I mean, the Bundys are really sweet people, you know, they're certainly not equipped, you know, they were not walking into the Waco, Texas situation, you know, they weren't armed to the hilt and they were just ranchers.
Right. Yeah, the situation itself didn't feel all that foreign to me, having served a couple tours in Iraq, as far as the stress level or the threat level. But as you said, it did feel much different that this was happening on our own soil. You know, the people that are behind those sniper rifles, the people that are tasing innocent citizens, they're us. They're our brothers.
Sure.
They're amongst us, and it is the most deplorable situation that we find ourselves in when our own countrymen are pointing their guns at us. And I can't say that it's in anger. I know that, you know, I don't think those guys want to be there pointing guns at Americans. There's a lot of situations that have been talked about that that kind of have presented themselves in a funny way. For instance, Daniel P. Love, the BLM special agent in charge, he had the demeanor, he carried himself, he had a very long beard and goatee, ball cap, sunglasses, chest plates, body armor. He looked like a private military contractor. And there was a few of those agents that did look like that. And that's one of the things I noticed when I arrived, was seeing who was there. It didn't appear like a normal, what would you expect from a land management agency.
Mm-hmm.
And, they had snipers on the hilltops there. They had one position that was overlooking the ranch until me and the gentleman from my local unit arrived. And then they moved that sniper position over to overwatch the protesters. They had some type of communications, mobile communication setups, wandering throughout the desert around the ranch. At one point, there was speculation. I didn't actually confirm it with my own eyes, but somebody said they landed an AH-64 Apache attack helicopter on top of the mesa overlooking their camp. So, yeah, the situation was fairly escalated. It was to that point where there was military force being brought upon American citizens.
So did you ever really have an opportunity to have contact and conversations with those folks, or you could, I can't even imagine looking those folks in the eye and just wondering what they were thinking. What does it take? You got to have a pretty cold heart to draw on American citizens like that.
Yeah, and I think that notion of how difficult that must be, although we know that humans are not above it. The situation has presented itself numerous times throughout history. But I think that the infeasibility of it, of the act, kind of promotes those, I'm not sure if they're conspiracy theories or if they're based in facts, but the notion that they may have been hired mercenaries or even foreign troops of some sort. I think that the difficulty of that notion kind of fuels that paranoia, that speculation. And that's unfortunate as well. This is not a natural feeling situation, and it draws out the best and the worst in people.
Yeah, that to me, that's just amazing. So you guys got there, immediately diffused the situation. I mean, you could kind of tell once the protesters started to arrive, once they found out that you were there, they kind of took a second glance at storming the fences of the Bundy Ranch. Can you tell me anything about what was going on inside the Bundy headquarters there? Can you tell me anything about the Bundys and what they were experiencing? I would imagine they would have been scared to death, although they seem very brave to me.
They are, and it's because they have that fear of God. They're a very religious family, so the fear of life and pain and suffering and such doesn't seem to strike them as it does a lot of other people. But, yeah, the situation definitely seemed to de-escalate as soon as we arrived. The Tuesday when I arrived, there was no other militia there. And so I immediately started making all those calls, and I did so on the drive down there as well, to start getting people coming, to let them know that the situation was getting pretty dire and was probably going to require some help. The Bundys themselves, they have known that this day was coming. It was a foregone conclusion to them. The escalation of, don't get me wrong, it was still a state of disbelief when it did happen. They weren't necessarily maybe convinced, but they had studied enough. They've studied enough history that they know how tyrannical governments act. Mr. Bundy has been involved in I hate to call it the politics of the rancher movement in Nevada, but he's been involved with even some other counties and helping to write up court cases and such. So they're not ignorant to how the course was going to go. And I think what was at first just a scare tactic, kind of an intimidation, to get the Bundys to buckle in some way, the amount of resources and the type of personnel, snipers and such, sharpshooters, they just went way too far. And the Bundys, they set themselves up very quickly to get this out to the public so that everyone would know what our government was doing, what not only what they're capable of, but what they were actually doing, that there's been a lot of speculation would happen at some point. And they set up all the media contacts that they needed to. They hit the social media pretty hard, and they did a pretty good job of keeping the public informed. Now, you had another element to this, which was misinformation being spread all over the place. This became very apparent to all of us as the situation moved on. And not just misinformation, but what appeared to be purposeful disinformation. So
right.
We ask ourselves there again, do our fellow citizens have a motivation for performing a disinformation campaign against us? And I can't think of any except for the ones that hold power, because they're the ones that control the action that's happening. So the only plausible scenario that we could come up with was that the federal government was waging a disinformation campaign against us, utilizing social media. And as we know, they use the mainstream media for such. They were fairly effective in it. We weren't necessarily planning on a federal response being the first Operation Mutual Aid mission. And the assets that the federal government can conjure up are far superior to that local governments can conjure up, although the pipeline of federal money going into these counties is for that purpose, to build their capabilities and basically be a remote arm of the federal government.
In your opinion, had you guys not shown up, I'm sure the federal government never expected the response that they got, from the protesters and the militia showing up. In your opinion, had there not been that kind of response, do you think that they would have proceeded and attacked the Bundys, based on what you know?
Well, first off, some would say that not only did they expect that response, if they're watching at all, the discontent that the people have with what the government is doing, some would say that they went to such a length to purposely draw out those individuals that would respond to such a situation. Maybe 10 years ago, a lot of people would say that sounds conspiratorial. I don't think that we're at that stage anymore. We're kind of figuring out that all the conspiracies are true.
Right. And
on the second note, I can't say whether or not they would have. I hope to God they would not have pulled the trigger on innocent Americans. And there again, whether they backed off because there again on Saturday, April 12th, the standoff, whether they backed off because they didn't want to shoot at American citizens, they felt that the situation had been escalated enough, it was time to go, there's no need for this, or whether they backed off because a bunch of armed militia and individual patriots showed up and pointed guns right back at them and actually had complete tactical superiority in the situation, it's difficult to say which one of those is the case. I hope it's because they don't want to fire on Americans.
Ryan, you were boots on the ground. You were in the Bundy home. You were the commander in charge there, organizing the area. You were with the Bundys on a daily basis. You got to know them fairly well. I want to give you an opportunity to tell us what you witnessed, because the media took a real horrible hack at Clive and Bundy. They tried very hard to disparage him and a smear campaign against him for comments that he made that were totally taken out of context. I would kind of like to have your opinion of what you learned about the Bundys and Clive and Bundy and what you saw there.
Yeah, well, first off, I have to clarify that the position that I occupied in Bunkerville was as a liaison, the militia liaison, not a commander, because the leadership overall, as I said before, is more of a coalition. The leaders get together of the different units, and the individuals are welcome to fall in with a unit that's there, or form up in the unorganized militia unit that gets formed. And so you want all of the leadership. Militia is free people. It's not like the military where you have a rigid structure and a uniform code of military justice. These are free men and women who are, as you said, stated before, they're sacrificing possibly their jobs. Some people came and were homeless because of it. They lost their home and all of it. So we can't necessarily expect a rigid structure to be the preferred method, because we want as much freedom as possible. So it's organized like a Republican government, if you will. But at any rate, so as far as the liaison position, what happened when I arrived, it began that relationship with the Bundys and Mr. Bundy specifically, and built a trust. And the difficult part of that trust was that I kept assuring him that there was a lot of people coming, and they really didn't arrive in force like that until Friday and Saturday. So he, you know, that was the purpose, is to build that trust so that we can work together the most effectively. And Mr. Bundy he did not seem shaken when I arrived, and he drove me around, kind of gave me a tour of everything in the area. We drove around for about an hour, and then we had a discussion. We established three objectives that we felt were pertinent to people that would be showing up to provide protection to the Bundys. So the militia objectives were to, the first objective being to protect the Bundys and the protesters and everyone involved, including, we wanted to specify that included the federal agents and the law enforcement that were there. The whole goal is that nobody gets hurt. The second objective was the opening of all the public lands that had been closed down by the BLM for this cattle rustling, and then maintaining the openness of those lands. And there's still militia on the ground maintaining the openness of that public land, and they did a good job of making sure that it was reopened. Number three is to help the Bundys out with rebuilding their infrastructure. The BLM tore out a lot of their spring works, water troughs and such that their family has built up over the last 130 years. And they need help getting that stuff put back together. So that's another thing I would implore anybody listening. If you want to do a service, that's a great one to take up. And it is resistance to the government at the same time, to a tyrannical government. Absolutely. But as far as the Bundys themselves are concerned, as I said before, they're just they have impeccable character. It's great to see a family structure. They work cohesively as a unit. Mr. Bundy is definitely the patriarch of a very religious family. They're all Mormons, and they all attend the church. Some of them hold positions within the church. And it was interesting for me to find out from Ryan Bundy that the prophets of the Mormon church have spoken over time since the mid-1800s about the cohesion between a religious people and a free government. A free country, and how the Constitution solidified that. And so the Mormon Church, even built within its structure, seems to be a goal of educating themselves on the Constitution. They reference it all the time, and you can see that in the videos if you watch the Bunkerville, the stuff that happened there at the standoff and afterwards, and see all those cowboys. They're all very educated in the Constitution. So it's just a great family. It seems like everyone that's around them is fantastic, and I couldn't speak highly enough of them.
Okay. Ryan, I can't thank you enough for coming on the program and giving me an update on this. I've been trying to get a hold of you for a long time, but you have been obviously very busy and hopefully spending some time with your family. You're back home now, I take it, right?
Yes, I've been back home for a couple of weeks. It's nice to be back with the family. That definitely. We'll have to. It's a very confusing situation on the ground there, and there's a lot of running around to do. And the media liaison crew that I put together, I didn't get them your name and number. So next time we'll take care of that. We'll make sure you got it.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely want to be in the loop. Although I was able to get quite a bit of information from some of your folks out there. Are you folks kind of still on the ready? You've got one ear to the ground. Is there a possibility you may need to go back?
Well, there's a personal security detail that's with the family at all times, and there's also still militia units rotating through and individuals from all over the country that are forming a multi-level security barrier, and hopefully they keep coming, because as the rhetoric has grown from the government and those within it, like Harry Reid calling us domestic terrorists.
Absolutely.
We know how the government deals with terrorists, and they don't negotiate. Well, I don't know. Maybe we're learning that they do negotiate, but at any rate.
You got to have something they want. I don't think you're harboring any al-Qaeda terrorist in your possession for a trade.
No, if we were harboring al-Qaeda terrorists, then the BLM probably would have come over and shake our hands, I guess.
Yeah, probably. So you guys are always... You've got one ear to the ground. You've got maybe other situations that you're watching very closely, hoping that you don't have to deploy more militia in any other places across the country. But after this situation, it's obvious to everybody in America that citizens are very well networked, very capable of standing up and pushing back, and you're not going to sit down and take it.
Right, This definitely changed things. I mean, I've heard some people say that this was the second shot heard around the world, there wasn't a shot fired, luckily. There are very few periods in American history where something like that has happened, and God forbid that it happens again. As far as situations that are brewing all over the country, I would implore people to look at the border. If anybody thinks that they can lend a hand with something or desires to lend a hand with something, then that's an area that needs attention. The BLM has been doing the same thing, grabbing up land all along the border, and Border Patrol doesn't patrol it. BLM doesn't do anything with it, so it's just a super highway for drugs and illegal aliens to come into the country. So that is definitely something we're watching.
Okay, amazing. Amazing work, Ryan Payne. Operation Mutual Aid, thank you so much for coming on with me tonight and giving us an update. And I hope that you'll keep us updated if anything else arises. We want to keep on top of the situation. You've been a fabulous resource. We have had a couple of great conversations with the Bundy family on the air. We appreciate what's really going on the ground, behind the scenes, without the media spin, straight from the horse's mouth kind of thing, so that people can be truly informed and, not get the media spin that distorts the truth.
Right, right. Straight from the mouth of the horse is the best way. And there again, the Bundys are great for that. They're educated and they speak well, and they voice the cause in a great way. And hopefully we'll do them justice as being the first to really make that stand.
Absolutely. Operation Mutual Aid. Thank you, Ryan. We'll be talking to you again soon. I appreciate your time. Good luck.
Thanks a lot, Lisa.
Bye-bye. All right. Just an amazing story, folks. And cannot thank Ryan Payne enough and all of the folks at Operation Mutual Aid that I've had contact with over the last few the character of these folks is just truly outstanding. The moral fiber and the way they conduct themselves is something that, this country just has not really been exposed to in a very, very long time. They absolutely defused a whole situation, no violence. They went into it with a nonviolent attitude, which is not the attitude that the media tried to portray of all these folks that descended upon the Bundy Ranch. And I'm telling you, folks, you got to step up. You got to step up and support these folks to help them out. If if any such situation arises like that in the future, we'll keep on top of it and let you know what you can do to participate and help support these folks on their mission to kind of push back against the Constitution. We are going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Paul Ellison, and we're going to talk about what's going on in the court systems down in Camden here in Missouri.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners, show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@missourigrassrootscoalition.org for details.
You live here?
Yes.
Well, maybe you know what a zombie is.
When a person dies and is buried, it seems there's certain voodoo priests who will have the power to bring him back to life.
Horrible.
It's worse than horrible because a zombie has no will of his own. You see them sometimes walking around blindly with dead eyes, following orders, not knowing what they do, not caring.
You mean like Democrats?
And the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
This is Lisa Payne Nager. You're listening to Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio. We've been having some technologies on the line. We have a switchboard full of lines available. I'm hoping Paul Ellison is on one of those lines. Paul, if you're on, can you hear me?
Lisa, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah. What is the last two numbers of your phone number?
66.
Okay, very good. All right, I can hear you fine. We have some other callers on the line, and I don't know who they are. Do you know who they are?
Lisa, I don't.
If you want
to take a couple of calls, feel free.
All right, we'll check in with those folks later, but I wanted to make sure that I got you on the line. So, Paul, it's been a couple of weeks since we've had the opportunity to talk, and there's evidently some more developments in the Ligueras case down there in Camden County. Denny Ligueras, has he been able to see his kids?
He did see them on Monday, and I have to say that the report that came out of the visit wasn't unexpected, but it certainly is sad. The alienation that's gone on between him and his children is really starting to take hold now. And unfortunately, because of what this family has been put through, you know, that's an incredibly difficult thing for any parent to deal with. And it really kind of brings home what really is at stake here in this case and so many others across our state.
Okay, to recap, just in case people haven't been following this case, the Ligueras family live in Camden County near the Ozarks, near the Lake of the Ozarks, and are in southern Missouri, so it's probably farther than the Ozarks. And the Ligueras' are divorced. There's a custody arrangement. And what happened was that the district, through various situations that go on in custody agreements and that kind of thing, the school district interceded or kind of overstepped their boundaries in a custody arrangement, and Department of Family Services got involved via the school system. And to make a very long story very short, and you can correct me if I'm going off on the wrong track here, Denny Ligueras was banned from actually having visitation with his kids. What's happened is Department of Family Services has come in and kind of rewritten a court-ordered custody agreement, and is required to only see his kids through supervised visitation. This has been going on for years now, and he has not been able to get in front of a judge to plead his case to get the ability to see his kids back. Am I getting close to that?
That's exactly right, Lisa. I would make one little adjustment to kind of how things worked out. The school district themselves, and actually this is relevant to some stories going on in St. Louis right now, the school district themselves were the ones who rewrote the custody agreement based on advice given to them by a lawyer named Ernie Trakas, who's in the news regarding the Fox School District in Jefferson County right now, and his efforts to silence parents who are speaking out against administrators' spouses who have been defaming character in regards to issues going on in that school. The school district actually, through their special education administrator, told the Lagarises that if you don't like us rewriting this court-ordered custody agreement, you can sue us.
Man.
Actually told them that in a meeting.
And you guys have audio of a lot of this. Is that correct?
We have audio of everything. These criminals, and I do not use that term lightly, their crimes have been recorded for everyone to see. Most recently, a couple of weeks ago, just after we spoke on your show, the next day we presented a falsified police report that was made at the Lebanon School District that was claiming Denny Lagarus to be in violation of a court order. This court order not only did not exist, we have audio to dispute that any sort of argument, any heated exchanges, et cetera, simply were not true. And today on our show, we were fortunate enough to have about 40 minutes of a cross-examination, if you will, with this police officer who wrote this report, who essentially, had to backpedal off of everything that he had written in that report, which has been used as a basis to strip Denny's parental rights and then extend that toward his wife, Ginger.
Amazing. Amazing.
It truly is.
How close is Denny to getting in front of a judge to kind of expose all this? Judges don't want this case to go to court. They don't want to have to deal with it and make a ruling on it. They don't want to have to admit that they know about it because it's on them when they do.
Well, as a matter of fact, it's been pushed off yet again. This
Not
is
surprised.
The case that seems will never end. Most recently, some of the developments that certainly have caught our attention is that here in the 26th Judicial District, here at Guerrilla Radio with American Spring and with Citizens for a Better Camden County, we have performed sunshine requests and done record reviews in the county clerk's office in order to see what kind of qualifications the guardians ad litem have in the 26th Circuit after it was revealed during this case that the 26th Judicial Circuit is clearly not only violating Missouri State Supreme Court rules, but also their own local 26th district or circuit rules in appointing these guardian ad litems fraudulently. After this was discovered, and after Denny Lagarus had proven in court that the guardian ad litem, who does have a conflict of interest as he is married to an employee of the Lebanon School District. After this person was removed for not having met the qualifications, the bare minimum qualifications for serving as a GAL, a new GAL was then appointed. And, you know, I think, Lisa, maybe you have some insight to this as well. I know that you've seen this court order that appointed the most recent guardian ad litem. But in that, the judge himself invents statute and tries to apply statute that simply does not in this case and gives essentially unconstitutional search powers to a lawyer acting as GAL, among other things.
Mm-hmm. And that's not uncommon. That happens a lot. It's not just happening in this case. It happens quite a bit. Unreasonable search and seizure is what I think they call it.
Right. I come into this with a novice perspective when dealing with family courts. But to actually see this written, and to see that the statutes that are cited are, one, invented, and number two, used completely out of any sort of legal interpretation in order to continue to deny these this family their rights. It's beyond appalling, and as I said before, it's criminal in this behavior.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the people do not understand the violation of your constitutional rights that go on when you enter a family court. And this judge absolutely wrote an order that gives any guardian ad litem access to any records, regardless of pertaining case or not, without having justifiable reason to obtain them.
Exactly right. And this is only the latest in what has been an absolute cavalcade of denials of rights down the line when looking at this case with the Ligarises. As I said before, I think on this show even, we have found through our research that an executive order signed by a former governor, in fact, has worked to combine the judicial and executive branches through a collusion and data sharing program with the Department of Family Services, the school districts, and the family court system, thereby eliminating parental rights altogether and expediting the process, or so they claim.
Yeah, absolutely. So where do we stand with these? I mean, these poor people have and probably spent tens of thousands of dollars up to this point. Where do we stand with things? What's the next move?
Well, the next move at this point is, of course, the constant merry-go-round of court dates. There have been several legal maneuverings. Most recently and most importantly, last week, the media in the community of Lebanon, Missouri, which is a small manufacturing community located on I-44 approximately, I would say about 80 miles or so north of Springfield. They're in Lebanon. They have actually, on the Lebanon Daily Record, gone forward and written an article about this case. The unfortunate part about it is typical of what we expect from our mainstream media. The title of the article was essentially Federal Lawsuit Considered Too Confusing for defendants. And the defense that the lawyers who represent over 100 defendants in this color of law federal lawsuit has essentially said, well, you know, this is far too long and far too confusing. We don't even know what we did wrong. And that is about the most disingenuous defense that I have heard to date. But at the very least, the mainstream media and the powers that be, whether it elected officials, judges, people in our police department, they're now actually having to set up and take notice that the people in our community simply refuse to allow this behavior to continue and move forward. You know, and one last thing, Lisa, that I did want to chime in just briefly. One of the defendants named in this lawsuit is the RLDS Church. And earlier in the broadcast, when speaking with Mr. Payne about his experiences on the Bundy Ranch, I heard him speak about the Mormon faith. And certainly, as with any faith, there are always more good people than bad. What we've seen here, however, is the darker side of those connections. We've uncovered here at the Lake of the Ozarks a private youth facility in which two of its executives have long histories with the court system, being accused of malicious abuse against their charges. And the judge that invented this order in this case, who is also a Mormon and a man of that faith, is denying this parent his parental rights in order to keep the children in a relationship with an abusing potential stepfather who also is a Mormon. It's a little dicey waters, and before we throw out all kinds of endorsements about this thing or that thing, maybe we ought to take a closer look.
Wow. A little behind-the-scenes favoritism going on, maybe.
You think? make
wow.
it look. I got to tell you, you know, Lisa, this is the disturbing part. It's not just this judge. It's not just this facility here at the Lake of the Ozarks. This religious organization has huge financial stakes in Pathways Behavioral Service, which is all around the Missouri area. Here locally, they use three doctors out of the Royal Oaks Hospital in Windsor, Missouri. Three doctors who, none of whom I am pretty confident, are born Americans, if you will. I think they're all, judging by the names, it sounds as though they're all imported. But these three doctors were responsible, if you remember, we talked about a case where a child was put on Prozac. These are the doctors responsible for this. They are part of this same network, and it's prevalent all around us. It's simply mind-boggling to look at the network of child trafficking that is in place not only in highly populated areas or third world countries where people are more exposed, but it's happening here in a small town in the Lake of the Ozarks. And folks, we don't have just one Ligaris case. We have at least five other cases that bear these same hallmarks that more than provide enough basis for this federal lawsuit no lawyer seems to be able to understand.
Or want to take on. Just
exactly.
It'll ruin their careers. Wow.
Uh-huh.
Wow. So let me kind of just on this. So this LDS connection, do you think that this could be going on between people of, you know, and, you know, to Catholics, to Baptists, to, is it an LDS issue, or is it just, you know, people that are just networking because they're of the same church? It could be any.
Lisa, I'm inclined to believe that it's simply a coincidence of association on the one hand. But on the second hand, if we look and seriously look at the Mormon faith, some of the extreme aspects of that Mormon faith and how they deal with children, you start to see this pattern of behavior and this desire. If we're going to be so brazen and bold as to baptize people who are dead into our faith, do we really think that these same sort of zealots would have reservations about taking living, breathing children and putting them in an environment where it swells their numbers?
Wow, something to think about. That's pretty scary.
Well, what's really frightening, Lisa, is, as I said, you know, what's frightening is I come from this from a completely different perspective. I'm not here to try to point fingers at anyone's religious beliefs or anyone's spirituality. That is every person's decision. And again, as I said, I think that there are certainly more good people of any faith than bad people in those faiths. But what we've seen historically over and over play itself out is that those who wind up in positions of power, whether at government, church, or corporate America, all too often these same sort of personalities that drive themselves to earn and attain those positions at the top require more than maybe someone like yourself or myself in order to feel fulfilled. And I think that is as much a part of this as any sort of religion.
Okay. Well, before we wrap things up, did I lose you? I think I might have lost him. Okay, we lost Paul. If he calls back within the next minute or so, we'll try to wrap up. Amazing story, folks. You can get all of that information on American Spring 2011. We're going to continue on with us to keep us updated on these issues. Sorry for the technical difficulties we've been experiencing on Blog Talk Radio tonight. We're going to try to work those out. Have that fixed for you by next week. Folks, this is a serious situation here going on in Camden County, and as Paul so clearly outlined, and it always seems to be this way, once you kind of find a case like this, all of these other cases seem to pop up. It's not just one family. It's not just happening in Camden County. It's more families in Camden County, and it's families across Missouri, and it's more families across the state. It's not just a father against mother. It's not about mother's rights or father's rights. It's about parental rights, and they're attacking structure folks, and they're doing it illegally. So I can't implore you enough to get involved in this story, Operation American, or I'm sorry, American Spring 2011. We'll have Paul back on again, and hopefully the members of Ligaris back again to talk about this situation as it develops or doesn't develop or as it strings along for a long period of time. We're going to take a quick break, folks, and we're going to come right back with Jane Weed.
Have you joined Missouri Grassroots Coalition yet? The results of the 2012 election proved that the grassroots conservatives need to work harder to make their voices heard in government. The best way for Missouri conservatives to make their voices heard is to join together within the Missouri Grassroots Coalition Network and show our elected that we are a strong, unified, conservative voice in Missouri. Go to the website, MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, and click on the Join tab. Give us your contact information so that we can keep you updated on the latest developments in Jefferson City and beyond. Also, sign up for grass fire alerts so that you can get immediate notifications when we need to call grassroots conservatives together in action. Use the MGC network to help your grassroots organization speak with a louder voice combined with grassroots groups across the state. Together, we can strengthen the conservative voice in Missouri.
The affirmative task we have now is to actually create a new world order, because the global order is changing again. And the institutions and rules that worked so well in the post-World War II era for decades, they need to be strengthened.
Our well-being at home and our leadership abroad are inextricably linked. Our friends and allies must again be able to trust us. From Israel to Colombia, from Poland to the Philippines, our allies and friends have to know that we will be reliable and consistent and determined. And our foes can have no reason to doubt our resolve, because peace really does come through strength.
This is Lisa Payne Nager. You're listening to Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grass.
Okay, sorry, folks. Again, more technical difficulties. Anyway, we're back. This is Lisa Payne Nager, Missouri Grassroots Radio, Culture Vigilante. Earlier this week, I had an opportunity to talk to Dr. Dwayne Weed. He's been on the program before. Dr. Weed has a couple of fabulous websites to help you if you are, you know, thinking that, and probably rightly so, that things are going to implode and maybe you need to make some preparations. We've had some conversations with him before about finances and all those kinds of things. This week, I had the opportunity to speak to him about healthcare. He's a licensed chiropractor, and he had some great advice for thinking about your healthcare in a situation where, you know, if things do implode and you can't get a hold of healthcare services, what you might do to prepare and take care of those issues yourself. Listen to this interview with Dr. Dwayne Weed.
This is Lisa Payne Nager. You're listening to Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio, and we're happy to have with us again Dr. Dwayne Weed. He's been with us before to talk about various survival issues. The last time he was on with us, we spoke about currency and money. Today, we're going to talk about the very essential issues of your health. Dr. Weed is a doctor of chiropractic. You can go to his website, naturalhealthschool.com, to get more information there, or survivaldoc.com to get some information about the various issues on survival techniques and your various health and important matters that may come up when, you know, if things fall apart. Thanks for being with me today, Dwayne.
Thank you very much, Lisa. Good to be here.
Okay, so the information, you've got some incredible websites up there, you know, in case, if everything falls apart, if we ever get to, in a position where things have just imploded, and, you know, folks are going to need to go back to the old idea where we're just going to have to take care of it all ourselves, we're not going to be able to rely on the government to take care of us, you've got fabulous, fabulous information up at both those websites. Last time we talked about fiat currency, and just very enlightening about the things that we discussed when you were with us last time, and people just don't, I guess, take the time to really understand how all of these things can affect us if things go awry.
today we've got health issues, and with Obamacare being such a big deal, you know, people are just now beginning to see how their health care is being affected with the VA that we've been watching, all those crises. What word of wisdom have you got for us today? What's the number one thing we need to look for?
Well, again, as a as a prepper or survivalist, I'm looking at scenarios in which the grid goes down, so to speak, or in other words, a scenario after an emergency, after a disaster, an EMP attack, or whatever it might be, or an economic collapse, whatever it might be. But if anything shuts down our normal systems that we rely on for food, water, electricity, then one of the things, of course, we're going to have to be concerned with is our health care. For one thing, immediately after an emergency, the healthcare industry, or what might be left of it, is going to be occupied with emergency situations. In other words, if you have an emergency and you call 911, all of the emergency personnel could be tied up, possibly even for days, with, say, if there's an earthquake, for an example, they could be tied up for days before they could actually get to your emergency. So for that reason, I advocate being able to take care of yourself, you know, being your own doctor. But it goes beyond that. I've heard different survivalists talk about possible biological attacks or possible natural biological disasters. In other words, maybe an epidemic that might be raging through the country, and if people are sick, if it's very contagious and everyone is sick. One scenario that I've heard predicted is that once it gets out of control, the healthcare workers themselves, a lot of them are not even going to show up for work because, of course, where a contagious disease will be spread most rapidly is going to be in hospitals. So first of all, a lot of your healthcare personnel might be sick themselves or sick or dead themselves, and some may choose not to show up for work knowing that this disease has a high ratio of deaths. And it's really highly contagious, you know, they might just decide to stay home and take care of their family rather than risk going in. So there are all kinds of scenarios that could happen. Of course, after an EMP attack, if we lose our electricity for any extended period of time, that's going to affect the healthcare industry. It's going to affect the hospitals. Now, hospitals have emergency backup generators, of course, but those generators are designed more for short-term emergency. They're not really designed, or they don't have enough fuel backup, say, or they might not have enough to keep them going for long extended periods. And so we don't know what might happen. Hospitals might be shut down due to lack of power, or they may be shut down just because of being overwhelmed with contagious diseases. So, but anyway, of all the different scenarios, of course, that we're looking at, I think it's important to be your own doctor, and I think, as I've said with a lot of different matters when it comes to preparedness, the most important thing that you will store away is the information that you store in your own brain. And, of course, that means that you learn a little bit about, or maybe learn a lot, hopefully, about the way your body operates so that you can take care of yourself and so that little emergencies won't become big emergencies. And to that end, it's one of the reasons that I established one of my websites, which is naturalhealthschool.com, for the purpose of educating people. That website is geared toward the layperson, but even though it's geared toward lay people, I've had a lot of professional people who have used it and who have sent me feedback about how they have enjoyed it and they have learned information there. I've had pharmacists, nurses, medical doctors, chiropractors, naturopaths, and massage therapists, every health professional you could think of, I've had use my natural health school. But again, it's designed for the lay person, so I keep things in layman's terms. But even though I keep things in layman's terms, one of the first lessons is medical terminology, so that you won't be so lost if you're reading a medical book or a health book, or if you're listening to medical people talk, and they use these large words that come from the Greek and the Latin that may be very intimidating. I have a whole lesson on those words to show you that they really are not that intimidating once you break down. Most of the long words the medical profession uses are just a series of smaller words put together, like prefixes and suffixes along with roots. And if you break the word down, some of these large words are really not that hard to understand once you know the basics, and that's what my natural health school is about. But the other thing I do at natural health school is I also teach you basic anatomy, and I have a chapter for each of the body systems. For instance, I have a chapter on the digestive system, the respiratory system, the immune system, etc. And on each chapter, I start with the anatomy. In other words, for like the digestive system, I talk about the anatomy, about the mouth, the teeth, the tongue, the saliva, the esophagus, the stomach, the small intestine, large intestine, and the liver and the pancreas and all those things and how they work, so that, say if something, just to use a simple example, you get a pain in your side and you wonder, well, what's wrong here? Well, it's on my right side. Okay, what side was the appendix on? I can't remember. Was that on the right side or the left side? But anyway, just knowing a few basic things like that sometimes can help you figure out what's going on. And an advantage of that, of course, is if you know what's going on, then you're less likely to panic. And to think that something major is wrong when it may be something very minor. It could just be a spasm or indigestion or something like that, and you might think you're having a heart attack. But anyway, so that's one of the things that my natural health school does, kind of give you a basic information. And then on that, we build to covering a lot of other topics like nutrition and how to take care of yourself with natural means, like with herbs and simple things that you can do like that if you can't get to a doctor.
Okay, so which to me would make sense because, I mean, really we should probably have a basic understanding of these things anyway. We've been so used to for so long just running to the doctor for every little sniffle and sneeze. I'm guessing there are probably quite a few things with just a little bit of knowledge that we could probably take care of ourselves and not have necessarily needed a regular doctor's visit for everything that goes on. And we know that our healthcare system has been compromised, so we're going to have to, even if the worst doesn't happen, it's a good idea to at least know a basic knowledge of some of these things, so that because it's not going to be so easy to get to the doctor's office anymore.
Right. Well, you know, another thing, too, is during an emergency, a lot of people are taking these prescription drugs, and when you deal with the elderly population, it's just mind-boggling. Like the average elderly person is on something like 20 different prescription drugs. And I've been in this business for over 25 years, and I have watched that number over the decades. I've watched that number change from average elderly person was on 5 prescriptions, which, of course, is ridiculous. I mean, that's too much. And then a few years later, the average would be 10. Then a few years later, the average would be 15 or something like that. And it just keeps getting more and more. And one thing, I've heard some preppers and survivalists say that, well, you know, when the system goes down and people are not going to get a hold of their prescription drugs, there are going to be huge numbers of the population who are going to die from lack of their drugs. And, of course, it's true that there will be some, no doubt, who will die from the lack of their drugs, but there actually probably will be a whole lot more who will be better off without their drugs. I remember back in the 80s, occasionally you'd hear about medical doctors going on strike. Generally in Europe, I think medical doctors would go on strike over there for higher pay, and they found out that every time medical doctors went on strike, that the mortality in the population actually decreased. So after a few years of that, all of a sudden medical doctors stopped going on strike. Because people were actually better off when they went on strike. But anyway, I'm not saying that, you know, people shouldn't take prescription drugs. And if I may throw in a little disclaimer here, you know, I'm not a medical doctor. I'm a doctor of chiropractic, and as a doctor of chiropractic, we don't use prescription drugs. And so I'm not licensed to put people on prescription drugs, and likewise, I'm not licensed to take people off prescription drugs. So if you want to get off your prescription drugs, you should talk to your medical doctor or pharmacist, and don't do anything just because I say that. But anyway, but it's still something that, you know, that people should think about. Generally, most of the prescription drugs that are prescribed for the profits of the drug companies. Yeah. They're not really prescribed for your health. And although some drugs are certainly necessary, when I have the dentist drill on my tooth, I certainly do appreciate that shot of into my jaw to alleviate the pain. And of course, there are other situations. If someone's had their thyroid gland removed and they're producing no thyroid hormone, they're going to have to take a prescription thyroid hormone. And so there are certainly situations like that, and I'm not going to get into details, but just to say that, you know, don't stop taking your drugs without knowing what you're doing and without the advice of a medical doctor. But still, I think that one thing people ought to do, and this is one thing I go into on my website, is they ought to look at the prescription drugs that they're taking and really question whether or not it's really necessary, and talk to their doctor about it, and ask their doctor if he will take them off of what they don't need. And if their doctor is refusing to do that, then they need another doctor, because there are a lot of medical doctors out there who will work with people and getting them off of the prescription drugs that they don't need to be on.
Well, let's talk about herbal supplements that might be beneficial to us in that under the right circumstances and under a doctor's care, that might be beneficial to us instead of some of the prescription drugs that are so commonly prescribed.
Right. Well, you know, Benjamin Franklin said it many, many years ago, and I refer to this quite often, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. All right. And so the best approach is to not be sick in the first place. In other words, the best approach is prevention, taking care of your health, and that's something that we really don't do very much in American society, or even in Western society as a whole. We have a tendency to just let our health go, and do things that are detrimental to our health, and we're not helped by the food industry out there. Another thing that I've seen occur over the years that I've been in practice, again, nutrition is a part of my practice, and I've always talked to people about their diets. But one thing I've noticed over the years is a continuing degeneration of the quality of the food that people are buying. And at the same time, people are buying more and more processed foods and eating less and less natural foods. And one thing that food companies found out a long time ago And they found out that if you put a little sugar in something, it sells better. For instance, there's no reason to put sugar in peanut butter. But they put sugar in there because it makes it sell better. So they're not interested in your health. They're interested in sales, of course.
Right.
But sugar, in my opinion, sugar has turned out to be one of the greatest problems as far as people maintaining their health, and people just don't really understand what a problem sugar is. But I think a lot of our health problems, like, for instance, high cholesterol can be traced back to sugar in your diet. High serum cholesterol has nothing to do with the amount of cholesterol that you eat. You can eat all the cholesterol-containing foods that you want to eat. As a matter of fact, generally the cholesterol-containing foods are the foods that are better for you, like eggs. Eat your eggs. Eat your butter. Certainly don't eat margarine. Eat all the cholesterol you want. But what makes your cholesterol high is your body's production of cholesterol. It's not the cholesterol that you eat in your diet, but your liver produces cholesterol. And what makes your liver produce cholesterol is a high carbohydrate, particularly a high sugar diet. But sugar is also inflammatory. It causes inflammation of the arteries. It causes inflammation of just about every cell in your body. But not only is sugar bad for you, but insulin, which is secreted by your body to take the to reduce your sugar levels or to get the sugar to go into the cells, insulin is really bad for you too, and it's really bad to have continual high insulin levels, because insulin, even though it has a very important function when it's secreted normally, a high sugar diet produces too much insulin, which causes, it's very inflammatory. Insulin prevents you from burning fat, and it causes the sugar that's in your bloodstream, it causes that sugar to go into fat, so insulin actually makes you put fat on, and where it likes to put fat the most is in the belly.
Mm-hmm.
So
and we see so much of that in our culture.
Here. What's that?
We see so much of that in our culture. Our culture is so much more overweight and obese than it was when I was a young kid, and maybe that's due to the influx of high cholesterol.
I think one of the most important things you can do is, and it's on my website, naturalhealthschool.com. I don't have time to go into a whole lot of details here in this interview, but on my website, if you go to a page that I've got there called Dietary Guidelines, and on the main page, you'll see on the menu there, on the main page, you'll see a dietary guidelines link. You click on that, and that goes into the details of what I recommend as far as how you eat. But in a nutshell, what I recommend is that you eat three meals a day, only three meals a day, nothing between meals at all. And when you eat, you should have a good amount, a good healthy portion of animal protein with all of those meals. And if you're getting hungry between meals and you say, you can't make it to the next meal without a snack, that's an indication that you didn't get enough protein. So one of the worst things you can do is get up in the morning and eat a high-carb breakfast. If you get up and eat a donut or a Pop-Tart or even cereal, something like that, you're really doing yourself in, and you're not going to make it till lunch without a snack, of course. Best thing, what I do in the morning is I get up, eat three eggs and a couple of pieces of Canadian bacon or some other kind of meat like that. And then I can make it all the way to lunch without a snack. But you need protein. You need animal protein. Not in favor of vegetarianism or veganism. And I've, over the years, I've tried everything. I went 3 years of my life on a vegan diet. So, I mean, I've been there and tried everything. And when I was on that vegan diet, my cholesterol, serum cholesterol level shot to the roof, and so did my blood pressure.
Wow.
And that's a diet. Cholesterol only comes from animal products. There's no cholesterol in plant products. So when you're eating a vegan diet, that means you have actually zero cholesterol in your diet. And yet my cholesterol shot through the roof. And that proved to me right there that your cholesterol level has nothing to do with what you, I mean, it has nothing to do with the cholesterol that's in your diet, but it's actually caused from sugar and carbohydrates. Because as a vegan, of course, what I was doing, I was eating healthy too. I mean, I wasn't didn't just cut out meat products. I mean, I did it intelligently. I read books on the subject and used food combining and all that kind of stuff. But still, as a vegan, though, it was a high carbohydrate diet. You know, high carbohydrate diet. But one other thing I'll say about sugar, and that is, wheat is the same as sugar. When you eat bread, wheat has the same glycemic index as sugar does. So when you eat bread, it's just like you're eating sugar.
Okay, so I have a couple of things that have come to mind. So I want to kind of pick your brain on this in this area. Body type. So whereas someone like you who really thrives on a high animal protein diet, and some people do great on vegan diets, do you think body type has anything to do with this diet, this variance in diet availability?
Right, it does. Let's say a type O person has a harder time with carbohydrates than, say, a blood type O has harder time than blood type A and B. But still, that's just a matter of degree. A high carbohydrate diet is pretty much equally bad for all blood types and all body types. Humans were never designed to eat an all vegetable diet. Humans are omnivores, and omnivores means that you eat, you know, plant matter as well as animal products too. And I don't think that any human, sure, people can survive on it, but I don't think any human has optimal health on a vegetarian diet.
Okay. Well, then let's talk about the sugars, because this is fascinating to me. I mean, I'm dealing with this in my own diet. I don't eat sugar. I mean, I have a problem with white sugar and wheat, just as you outlined there so clearly. And so I've switched to natural products like stevia. I don't even use honey because it's got too high of a sugar content for me. Stay away from all that kind of stuff. So how do you feel about those kinds of products, the Truvias and the stevias and the agaves and all those?
Stevia, I pronounce it stevia, you can pronounce it either way. I actually grow stevia. I have a ton of it growing here. I've got it growing in my windowsill, and I've got it growing in my front yard, in my garden, and I dry it in my dehydrator, dry the leaves, and I use that. Stevia, of all the different low-calorie sweeteners, stevia is the only one that I recommend. You know, I certainly don't recommend aspartame and all those chemical sweeteners. I would certainly stay away from those. They're even worse for you. Most of them are even worse for you than sugar, and sugar is deadly. Stevia is, there's no problem with stevia at all. It's sweet, and it's almost no calorie, and I mean, it's a little bit different. You know, it takes a little getting used to, but you know, after going for 20, 30, 40 years or whatever, you know, eating white sugar, you can't expect just to switch to an herb and then all of a sudden, not have to get used to, different tastes and also a different way of cooking, different way of doing things. But if you cut the sugar and the carbs out of your diet, I mean, you lose that craving for them that most of us have. And not just the cravings but for sugar, but just the craving for carbohydrates in general, like bread, and grains. I don't advocate grains, eating very many grains at all. Vegetables, great. You know, vegetables are wonderful, but, and fruit is okay in moderation, but I don't recommend fruit juice because fruit juice is concentrated sugar.
Mm-hmm.
But eating fruit itself in moderation. I mean, you can overdo the fruit itself too. But you can eat a lot of things as long as you get the protein. You need to balance it with the protein. You know, and have the protein with every meal. But anyway, Lisa, I don't want to get off entirely on my anti-sugar speech here. I will refer people to my website on that, where my dietary guidelines where I go over these things. But getting back to what we were talking about, which is the preparedness, there are so many things that we could talk about when it comes to your health. Other than your diet, I mean, the reason I bring up diet is because I think that when we go into an emergency, you're going to be a lot better off if you go into it in a healthy state than if you go into it, sick. If you go into it with diabetes or some other kind of blood sugar problem, which is extremely common, in our society. Like you said, most Americans are overweight, and if you're overweight, it means that you've got some blood sugar problems. If you're not a type 2 diabetic, I mean, you're very likely you are a type 2 diabetic, but if you're not a type 2 diabetic, you still have some blood sugar problems, and you're an insulin reactor. So what I would recommend that people do is as part of their prepping, for any type of emergency that may be coming down the line, is to just get healthy. And that means get fit. It means also getting exercise, instead of just sitting around on the couch watching television all the time, eating potato chips and growing your belly.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, get off the couch and get out and get some exercise. And also choose, healthy foods. Stop all the junk food, especially sugar, of course, but try to eat a more natural diet. And, of course, we're talking about changing someone's lifestyle. So you're talking about, one of the hardest things for a person to do, probably the only thing harder to do, would be to quit smoking, which, of course, is another issue that we could talk about. But I encourage people, with the limited amount of time that we have to talk today, rather than get bogged down too much in any one topic, I just encourage people to just really whatever they can do or whatever they, feel like they can do, just get healthier than you are now. Try to reduce your dependence on medicine. Look for healthier alternatives. Look for natural alternatives, and get fit so that, when the collapse occurs or whatever disaster occurs, if you have to get out and run across a field, or if you have to grab a child and carry a child, out of an emergency situation or something like that, you don't have a heart attack when you're doing it.
Okay. Well, from a prepping standpoint, we all know, and a lot of us are trying to be healthy, and maybe we're being led down the wrong. We've been, following the food pyramid that the government's been giving us for so long, that seems to be, it's obviously completely upside down and not anywhere close to what we need to be eating. What can people do in terms of a prepping standpoint? What kinds of things should folks have on hand in case, the bottom drops out of everything, and maybe it's just good to have it on hand anyway, even though that you do have still access to doctors. What kind of changes can we make in our lives? What kind of herbs should we start to look to? Stevia is obviously a better choice than sugar, and you can use stevia on a one-to-one basis for sugar when you cook. A cup of stevia is equal to a cup of sugar, pretty much. I think stevia is a little sweeter. But, there are things that we can do in our lives. What do you think that people should kind of start to have on hand to phase things out of their life and replace them with what?
Right. For one thing is, like I said before, if you're on prescription drugs, you should really do an inventory of your life and your drugs and try to get off, because if you can't get your drugs, where are you going to be if you can't get your drugs? And some drugs require that you are withdrawn from them slowly. It's particularly things like antidepressants. If someone stops taking antidepressant just cold turkey immediately, then they can get very suicidal. And, of course, that's a very dangerous, life-threatening situation. And one reason I don't recommend people, just taking themselves off their drugs without some professional help. But look for natural alternatives. And of the natural alternatives, look for the things that you can grow yourself. You know, I mentioned the stevia that I grow, but I have a lot of herbs in my garden that are medicinal herbs that I grow for the purpose of having medicines if we have a collapse and the grid goes down and we can't get to the drugstore. The drugstores are all closed or don't have it, anything in them. I grow, say, cilantro or coriander is an herb that I grow. It's not only a delicious herb to use in, put it in tomato dish, make salsa and stuff like that. But also cilantro is a detoxifier. It removes heavy metals.
Oh.
From your body. I also, one of my favorite plants to grow, and one reason is because deer don't eat it, because deer eat just about everything that I grow in my garden. But one thing they don't eat, or haven't so far, is kale. And I grow a lot of kale, and we love it. And kale is a super green food. You know, a lot of times we buy these exotic, real expensive green foods, you know, at the health food store and stuff like that. Well, kale is one that you can grow yourself, and one thing you can do is you can store up, you know, we store up food and we store up water and we store up medical supplies, but one thing you can do is you can store up nutrition in your body, because your body actually stores minerals and vitamins, and most Americans are deficient or in a lot of minerals because they never get them in the first place. So, so who wants to go into an emergency situation already at a disadvantage because you're already in short supply? So I recommend stocking up. I think one of the most important things that you can stock up on is knowledge that you put in your head. And the second most important thing you can stock up on is nutrition, you know, that you can store in your body so that when something happens, you're starting off in a healthy situation. But anyway, there's a lot of things you can grow. There's a lot of herbs you can grow for your immune system. Garlic is a great natural antibiotic, and it's real easy to grow here. I grow purple coneflowers or echinacea, which is known for the immune system. You use the root generally. I grow echinacea flowers in my yard. They make a beautiful purple flower. And my wife will tell you that if I'm growing something, it's because I'm either planning on eating it or using it as a medicine, you know. So if I plant flowers in my yard, you know, they may be pretty ornamental flowers, which echinacea is, purple cone flowers.
Yeah, it's all over the
place. But it's not growing there just because it's a pretty flower. You know, it's growing there because I'm planning on using it as medicine. But other things we can do to prepare, of course, is everybody else needs to have a really good first aid kit. With you know, well-stocked, large first aid kit, and of course, if there are prescription drugs that you can't live without, and that you can't get off of for whatever reason, say maybe you've had your thyroid gland removed and you have to have the synthetic thyroid hormone, you need to look into storing a supply, and you're going to be limited in what you can store, but if you could at least store a couple of months worth, you know, hopefully if there isn't interference mm-hmm. with the regular supply line, hopefully, you know, it will get back in the supply chain, you know, within a couple of months. At least have, you know, a few months supply. And you can, as far as getting prescription drugs for that purpose, you know, you might be able to talk to your doctor and tell him exactly what you're doing. You know, tell him you're a prepper and you want to put up some extra prescription drugs and see if he'll give you an extra prescription. And then you rotate it out. Of course, you don't keep, you know, you use your oldest. Like with everything when we're prepping, we always want to rotate and use the oldest first.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. So that's, there are just a lot of things, you know, that we could do. But also learn to forage, you know, learn wild plants. I mean, there are a lot of wild plants that grow in Missouri that have medicinal use.
That's amazing, and it's, I'm sure, something that most people are not thinking about, since our culture is so steeped in being able to run to the drugstore. It's 5 minutes away. You can just pick up whatever you need at the nearest Walmart, and or you can get into the doctor within 24 to 48 hours to take care of your sinus infections and those kinds of things. You know, I think I saw, I'm not sure, I think it was on the Survival Doc, how to make colloidal silver. What is colloidal silver, and what does it do?
Yeah, colloidal silver is a natural antibiotic, people take it internally as an internal antibiotic for infection, and it does work for that. But it's, to me, my personal experience is it has its best benefit for an external antibiotic, and it's just almost miraculous when it comes to using it on externally, you know, on cuts and or infections, any type of thing like that. And I use it for, you can use it as drops in your eye for, you know, an eye infection, conjunctivitis or something like that. You can use it in your sinuses for a sinus infection, and it's easy to make yourself. If you have, you know, a couple of 0.999 pure silver bars and three 9-volt batteries or some other similar electrical supply, and so it's easy to put in your survival kit. It's easy to put away a colloidal silver generator. And on my my website, you're right, and my YouTube channel, and on my website too, I've got a couple of different videos on how to make colloidal silver. One is the way that I make it myself, and then also we had there's another one that someone else had a little bit different way of making it, and both ways work. But I would I would definitely look into that could be a lifesaver. You know, having a natural antibiotic when mm-hmm. can't get to medicines, that would be a lifesaver.
Absolutely. All right. That's a great deal to think about. Thanks, Dr. Duane Weed. Survivaldoc.com, naturalhealthschool.com, incredible, incredible information, things that, you know, you're just going through your daily life. We've been just conditioned out of all of these. And some of these things, you know, I heard my grandmother speak of, you know, in days of old, just natural health remedies. They're not necessarily old wives' tales. You could probably incorporate these into your life today and be better off for it, save on your doctor bills, regardless of what happens or what does not happen with our current health system. Thank you so much, Dr. Duane Weed. I hope you'll come back again soon and spend another half hour with us and give us another great topic.
Well, thank you, Lisa. I enjoyed it as always, and I'll be glad to come back.
Thanks. Survivaldoc.com and naturalhealthschool.com. Thanks a lot.
Well, that's going to just about wrap it up for us this week on Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio, folks. I want to extend my condolences to the family of Mark Messer, a great patriot out here in the St. Louis, St. Charles County area. He passed away today. He will be missed by many out here in this area. He did a lot of great work. And again, thoughts and prayers go out to his family. Want to thank very much Mr. Ryan Payne for coming on with us from Operation Mutual Aid, giving us an overview of the militia movement and what went on at the Bundy Ranch. Thanks to Dr. Duane Weed and to Paul Ellison, who will be back on with us again very soon. We had some technical difficulties and lost him during his interview. He's going to keep us updated on what's going on with the Lagares family. We're going to try to keep all of that situation out there, folks, for you to watch, and all the other ensuing things surrounding it as they develop. Please follow me on Facebook and Twitter, Culture Vigilante. Thanks to Owen Schroyer, who I will be on 1380 AM KXFN at 9:15 on his show to kind of continue this discussion. Sorry for the technical difficulties again with his interview today. Owen has got a great thing going on every night, 9 to midnight on KXFN. You can stream it. You can tune in on 1380 in St. Louis if you have the opportunity. Tune in to Missouri Grassroots Radio the rest of the week, Fridays and Saturdays with Dave Court, and Tuesday evenings at 8 o'clock with Cynthia Davis. And until next week, folks, we will be back with you again here on Culture Vigilante, Missouri Grassroots Radio, Wednesday, 7 p.m. Thanks. Good night.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.